hope it's something else. Flowers get a little boring, unless they're from Chris Honrack, the Gilded Lily. And I have to say that Chris is phenomenal, and he can always put together something special. And also want to give him a shout-out for all of the volunteer work he does. We're talking about him the other night. We're putting together a gala for volunteer guardianship one-on-one. And, of course, Chris always does such wonderful table decorations. But in any event, what are we here today? We're here to talk about, obviously, the law. I'm Pat Smits. But before we do that, there will be cold weather tonight. Clear, but it could get down to 8 degrees, which in New Jersey is very cold weather. So you'll see if there are any drafts. And, of course, any of the little critters outside will be trying to find a nice warm place. At least we find that. I don't know what our mouse count is up to, but it's nearing record high. So what else? Tomorrow, sunny, high of about 32 degrees. So although it's going to be cold, it should be sunny. And that's always nice, especially when you can have a window or something else where you get a lot of sunshine. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy, low of 21 degrees, so much warmer than tonight. And by Sunday, I always say Sunday sunny, and I have a trouble saying that, but it's partly sunny on Sunday, so that's easier. High of about 47 degrees, so that's going to be quite a jump. By Sunday night, partly cloudy, low of about 29 degrees. And then on Washington's birthday, which is Monday, so great for all of you folks who have the day off, it should be mostly sunny and a high of about 48 degrees. So for the golfers, it's a good day to play golf if your club is still open. And I know some people who will probably go down to the shore. So what we're going to do today is we're going to just talk about legal cases and be right back after a couple spots from our sponsors.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, Hunterdon Chamber Radio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Well, good afternoon. I'm Pat Smits. The program, It's the Law. Not many exciting things happening in the law. However, let's talk about what has been reported recently. I thought there was one blog or blurb that was rather interesting. A New York lawyer who tried to escape a grand larceny investigation related to one of her cases by buying a sailboat in cash and heading to St. Croix in the U.S. Virgin Islands. So she tried to escape. Now, why in the world she would try to go to one of the U.S. Virgin Islands if she was escaping from a grand larceny investigation is pretty amazing, but that was one of the things that the Manhattan District Attorney's Office is handling right now. I would hope that most lawyers are as troubled as I am about what's happening in the Justice Department, and when you have four federal prosecutors who will not proceed with the case based on the interference of the president. I don't care what party he is. That's very serious. And, of course, I don't think there was an impeachment trial, since as a trial attorney, the only time I considered a trial is if there are witnesses and testimony. Seemed more like an oral argument and a motion. But anyway, I won't get on to my political thoughts of all of this at this point. However, we should all be very concerned about some of these things that are going on. The rule of law has always been something that most of us take seriously. Our freedoms, our freedom to speak out, and the rule of law, very, very important in this country, and makes it so different than other countries. For anyone who has, lived in another country, you probably, I know I do, recognize the difference. And so there was a review. The attorneys are asking to review an ethics opinion that said it was okay for an attorney to buy a competitor attorney's name as a keyword in an internet search. I would go along with the New Jersey Bar Association and the Bergen County Bar Association that to buy a competitor's name as a keyword in an internet search, I can't imagine that that would be permitted, but we will see. And there are briefs filed by the New Jersey Bar Association with respect to that case. So there were a couple who was injured in a collision with a commuter bus settled their case in Essex County for $2.4 million. I know everybody, and that may have been a high award and is Essex County, but believe me, folks, most of us would not want the kind of injury that when you recoup that much money. So there's a number of employment litigation cases, although they were not approved for publication. There was a tax case that is somewhat interesting, although unpublished, United Autoland, Inc. versus the Division of Taxation. And that was a tax court decision, and the director moved to dismiss plaintiff's complaint for lack of subject matter jurisdiction, meaning that the court didn't have jurisdiction to deal with whatever the plaintiff, the complaint was. So the plaintiff was a used car dealership, and they received a notice of assessment from the Division of Taxation following an audit. And the division assessed sales and use tax and corporate business tax along with penalties and interest for the period ranging from the third quarter of 2012 through tax year 2016. And the plaintiff mailed a letter contesting the notice 175 days after plaintiff received the notice. The division denied plaintiff a hearing to contest the assessment because the plaintiff had failed to submit his protest within 90 days. So one of the things everybody needs to be concerned about are deadlines. And this case, although this case had a 90-day deadline, other cases have a much shorter deadline or a much shorter statute of limitations. So that's always something that you can't just ignore things. And so often I find people do. And as a result, it makes everything much more complicated. So in this case, the plaintiff filed the present action, and in support of its motion to dismiss, the director argued that the plaintiff's complaint was untimely filed, and therefore the court lacked subject matter jurisdiction. So the reason in this case is that the complaint was not timely filed. Now, the court agreed and granted the motion to dismiss, ruling that the plaintiff's failure to file a protest with the division or a complaint in court within 90 days of receiving the notice of assessment was fatal to the court's jurisdiction to consider the plaintiff's complaint. So that's, sleep on your rights and you lose them. That's my take of this. You can't sleep on your rights. And, and the other thing people so often do is call the attorney, the day before the end of the time and the time limit. Don't do that, folks. Sometimes the attorney is going to be somebody that you may have used a number of times, but is not familiar with that type of case, and so needs time to refer you to someone else. In any event, not the time to procrastinate. Now, this is interesting, a bill that would make New Jersey the second state in the country to provide for compensation of collegiate student athletes passed the state Senate on Monday. So that's really an interesting case, but of course, if anybody's been reading or listening, I guess listening because it just came down today, the guilty verdict against, and I'm not sure how to pronounce his name, excuse me, but it's an attorney who represented Stormy Daniels, and he was found guilty of attempting to extort money from Nike. And you're thinking, well, wait a minute, how does that play? But the fact is he was apparently trying to, he was found guilty of attempting to extort money from Nike, the shoe company, because he otherwise would release information about how they provided shoes to college athletes. So that's how, in my mind, these two come together. So there's a labor law cases that were decided. And then there was a case, and I haven't followed up on it, but it sounded interesting. A college student is partially paralyzed when he swerves to avoid a head-on collision with a vehicle that has entered his lane of travel and instead drives up the guy wire of a utility pole, spins off the wire, flips his vehicle onto the roof, and collides with the pole. So the question there is, who are going to be the defendants? The real issue would be, could he ever figure out who entered his lane of travel? And, of course, the proof problems are going to be significant. But what would be of further interest, and I don't know, is whether the other car bothered to even stop. As I said, there's some criminal law cases that were, reported. And they're up on appeal. There was one, this was in the newspaper, where two men who had been convicted of murder actually were, when the appellate division overturned their convictions, and I believe the murder happened in 2005, and they were just released. So I guess the question is, how much time did they actually spend in prison? But they were in state prison in Trenton, and they were released because after the appellate division overturned the conviction because it was based on really flimsy, if any, true evidence, the prosecutor's office decided not to try to, again, press charges against them. So and the other interesting part of that, and I don't have a lot of information about, but the other interesting part about it is that these two men who were accused of being accomplices, apparently didn't even know each other. So the only time that they began to know each other was after they were accused of being accomplices in murder, and so they did, they did become acquainted, of course, in prison, and possibly became very close friends. I don't know how the prosecution in that case ever put these two guys together. Apparently, they had a crack addict who testified, and that was the only witness, and apparently her testimony was very, very inconclusive, to say make the best of it. And one of the reasons, I won't get on my high horse, but one of the reasons that I've never approved of the death penalty is another time, another era, or another state, these two men could have been sentenced to death and actually executed. So, tough, because there are a number of men and women who are later found that they did not commit the crime, especially with the DNA evidence that we have today. And remember, the DNA evidence was not used. There were no testing, very little testing done in the past, more now. But, and that is, of course, different if there's DNA evidence. But in the case I'm talking about, one of the men, he said that he came upon the bodies of the dead woman and dead man, and that's, he was the one who contacted 911 to report it, and then he ended up being convicted of the crime. So another interesting news brief is apparently PNC Bank was hit with a $2.4 million verdict over a customer's sexual harassment of an employee. So now this was not an employee harassing a customer. This is the other way around. So actually, this is a verdict that demonstrates employers' potential exposure to sexual harassment claims based on the acts of clients or other non-employees. So most of us would not think that we could ever be held responsible for an act of a client or of a non-employee. So in this case, the jury awarded $2.4 million to a former PNC Bank employee who said the company failed to protect her from this unwelcome touching by a customer. So significant decision, and poses a significant concern, or should pose significant concerns for employers. I was glad to see that the Senate confirmed 9 Superior Court reappointments, and apparently also there was a new administrative law judge. Now, people say to me, well, wait, what do you mean, reappointment? Well, number one, if you don't know, in New Jersey, judges are not elected. And I can get on my high horse and tell you why that is the best system. I mean, thank goodness we don't have our judges who have to run for office and then run again every 2 or 4 years. This is a huge problem as far as I'm concerned in other states. So what happens? Well, when a judge is appointed, they sit for 7 years, unless there is a problem, of course. But if, assuming they do a good job and et cetera, sometimes a mediocre job and sometimes an excellent job. In any event, after that 7 years, they're up for reappointment. And that's when there's real concern, and there will be people who go and testify against the judges, sometimes with good reason and sometimes without. I know that there have been family law judges who have done really commendable work in the trial court, and yet they'll have some disgruntled clients showing up and testifying. In fact, that really led to the decision that judges rotate so that, and although they may not say this, they don't want, the system does not want judges to be sitting on the family bench right before they go up for tenure. It's pretty commonly known that, a year before they go up for tenure, they'll be switched to either civil or criminal. And the reason is that more family litigants who are disgruntled will show up to testify against the judge. Whether it's right or wrong, they'll do that. So in any event, we had all of these recommitments reappointments. And I don't think, so all of these reappointments now, these judges have tenure until they're age 70. There's also a bill pending to increase the age where judges have to retire. And that will be helpful because, first of all, now nobody is going to accept, or very few people would accept, a judicial appointment if they're 60 years old, because it means that they would have to retire before they're eligible for a full pension. And also, there are many judges, experienced judges, who would continue to sit after age 70, and now they have no option. They can be reappointed, they could be appointed to do temporary, what they call on recall are judges after they retire, if they go back on the bench, it's for recall, and they can do that between the ages of 70 and 80. I think that has to be looked at every year or so. So there are judges who do that. Frankly, what most of the judges are doing at age 70 is they are retiring on full pension, and then they're going to work for law firms. And they're doing mediation and arbitration and anything else that does not include going to court, because they are prohibited from going to court. But other than that, they can practice law, they can do mediation, they can do arbitration. And I should say they're prohibited from going to court in New Jersey, because a friend of mine years ago, when he retired, he moved to Vermont and started practicing law with his son, and of course he did go to court because he could go to court in Vermont. So but many judges should not be forced into retirement at age 70. I think there's a recognition. I hope there's a recognition that people over 70, should not all go out to pasture. But that brings up another problem, which is there are times where it's very difficult to convince a judge who would love to sit on the bench until he was 72, 73, 74, that a person, and usually it's a man, who's had a very, worked very heavy construction or other things that take it out of, you just can't work at that kind of a level where you need that kind of physical strength. And so sometimes the judges, not sometimes, most of the time the judges do not understand it. And these men are expected to work until their retirement age, meaning full Social Security retirement age, where many of them would have said all along their intention was to retire at 55 at the latest. So interesting problem. Certainly, judges need to understand why some people, men especially, more so now women who are getting into some of these same jobs, they really need to retire. They're worn out. So let me just break and play a few more spots and then come back. And I hope anyone listening will think of listening to the sports guys today, even though you don't usually have fun listening to sports, because we're scheduled to have one or two guests who will talk about fishing in Canada, in Manitoba, I believe. So stay tuned.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterton at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterton, the voice for mental health in Hunterton County.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provide sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterton Healthcare, your full circle of care.
¿Sabía que de cada 5 personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental? NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
Well, I'm back. I'm Pat Smits. I'm an attorney here in Hunterton County. Those of you who know me know that my practice is limited to family law. I also do some guardianship work, do a fair amount of what I would call international family law. Not that I'm appearing in other countries, but that the cases involve assets in other countries, and sometimes there's litigation in other countries, and of course I would only handle the litigation here in New Jersey. But it makes for some very interesting cases. But then I think all of the matters are interesting because each family is different, and each family really needs to resolve their issues that will best benefit their whole family. And really, if they do that and focus on the children, things really can work out for the better. But it's not a fun time in people's lives. So I also handle premarital agreements, which more people should have, and cohabitation agreements with anyone who is going to cohabit should have some kind of a written agreement, depending on the circumstances of the case, of course. But let's get back to this is a case under the title of dispute resolution. And a case, the name is In the Matter of the Estate of Athana Senosis. Excuse me if I pronounced that wrong. But this shows a number of things that people need to be concerned about. In this case, the appellant, the person who appealed, was the decedent's son. And he appealed from the lower court's order that referred his claims to arbitration. Now, arbitration is a way that that a lot of things are handled. But in any event, you have to be very careful if you're going to arbitration because the arbitrator has a great deal of power, but only to deal with the things that are being arbitrated. So in any event, the appellant and the respondent, the person who responded to the appeal, were brother and sister, and they were co-executors and beneficiaries of the estate. Well, right there, I think anyone who's, drafting a will should think very, very carefully about whether there should be co-executors. Can cause real problems because, these things go to court. if the executors cannot agree. So I would think that rarely should there be a co-executor of an estate. And in this case, they were both the co-executors and the beneficiaries. So at the time of his death, the decedent was the sole officer, director, and manager of a corporation which owned and operated a diner, as well as other assets, which very significant, a liquor license, real estate, trade fixtures, goodwill, and furniture. So after their father's death, the brother secured a $2.5 million cash offer to purchase the assets of the corporation, but never received authorization from his sister to close the sale. Instead, his sister filed suit against him. Then what happened next? And that these could be novels, but in any event, what happened next is the parties signed an agreement to participate in mediation and arbitration to resolve the dispute. Now, that's very significant because, especially in arbitration, an arbitrator really is bound by the terms of the arbitration agreement. It's somewhat more flexible in mediation because parties can mediate and then informally ask the mediator to deal with other issues. But in any event, in this case, the agreement included a stipulation that the parties could not expand the agreement. Now, this was the agreement to mediate and arbitrate. And they stipulated that they could not expand the agreement without mutual consent. So in other words, one of them couldn't go to the mediator, or more likely the arbitrator, and say, okay, I want you to add on this additional issue and arbitrate this, not unless both parties agreed. So after the agreement was executed in this case, the corporation was sold for $1.75 million. And the appellant brother sought to add claims to the arbitration. After the sale, obviously received less than he anticipated because he had secured a cash offer of $2.5 million. So, as I said, he sought and tried to get added claims to the arbitration. But the sister opposed what he was asking, and because of that, the arbitrator denied his request. So the appellant brother then filed litigation for the loss of $750,000 in value. Since respondent opposed adding the claims to the arbitration. So litigation was the only remedy. In other words, he had to see whether or not this could be litigated since the other was simply, there was no scrutiny of the other agreement. So he also said that then what happened next is a respondent opposed to the arbitrator adding anything, and so he denied the request. Next, the brother then filed litigation for the loss of $750,000, in value. So then what was going on? Excuse me for that little lapse. So, as I said, the respondent filed a motion to dismiss. The lower court denied that request, finding that since the respondent opposed adding the claims to the arbitration, litigation was appellant's only remedy. And then 2 months later, the respondent informed the court that she agreed to add the claims to the arbitration. So although the appellant now told the court that claims should remain in litigation, the trial court, even though the appellant said that now that they were in litigation, he wanted these claims to remain in litigation. And even though he did that, the court ordered the claims to be addressed to the arbitration. So guess what? This case was going to go up on appeal. It did. And the court noted that although the parties had both switched positions, the record did not show any point in time where the parties agreed to add these new claims to the arbitration. And they also found that without mutual agreement, the scope of the arbitration was not set by the agreement. So the new claims should remain with the trial court. So big problem in arbitration is that the attorneys and their clients need to sit down before meeting with the arbitrator and not only plan a strategy of attack, but, and I use that term loosely, but need to be sure that all the claims that you want dealt with are put in the four square of that contract. Because if not, you can't come back later on and say, oh, I want to add something. Now, of course, you can redo the agreement for mediation if both parties want to eliminate the same thing, for example. Not going to happen. I can see that it's just not going to happen in most cases. Well, there's another foreclosure case, and frankly, the court seems to give short shrift to these cases, the plaintiffs or the banks don't seem to have to do much to win. I guess that's just my view. But in this case, the plaintiff was Ditech Financial, one of the, we don't call them mills any longer, but one of these huge conglomerate, at least it seems that way, that handles, hundreds of these cases. And so this is one that, in fact, this time, Ditech appealed from a chancery order granting summary judgment to the defendant, Thompson Realty Company of Princeton, and also giving Thompson's 2006 judgment a lien priority over Ditech's 2004 email. And the appellate court basically upheld the comprehensive and well-reasoned opinion and named the judge. And this is unusual. So they said, we affirm substantially for the reasons set forth in Judge Margaret Goodzeit's comprehensive and well-reasoned opinion of February 22nd, 2017, which apparently were amended by two orders which corrected a clerical error. So this is, and it's back and forth here. But in any event, this was Somerset County Judge Goodzeit, who is a well-respected judge. And so the attorneys, I'm not going to mention the attorneys, but I will say that it is unusual, as I said, to mention the judge. And in this case, they did and basically said because of her well-reasoned opinion, they really didn't have to give much of an opinion. And of course, even though they said that, it's you know, what, 10, 12 pages long. So the facts in this case were undisputed. The Carol M., the one of the defendants in this case, borrowed $252,700 from Indy Mac Bank to finance a purchase of residential property in Somerset Township. And Indy Mac secured the loan with a purchase money mortgage and recorded the mortgage in the first position of priority with the Somerset County Clerk's Office. All of this is exactly what has to be done. And then in March of 2004, the homeowner, so this is 2001, next transaction, 2004, she obtained another mortgage from Indy Mac, refinancing the mortgage. So that's what she was intending to do then. So on April 20th, 2004, the mortgage was discharged and recorded in Somerset County on May 4th. However, the Indy Mac's title agency, or title agent, erroneously recorded the refinancing mortgage with the Mercer County Clerk's Office instead of doing it in Somerset County. And so it wasn't until September of 2011 that the refinancing mortgage was correctly recorded on the Somerset County Clerk's Office. So because there were a series of assignments, DITEC became the holder of the refinancing mortgage. And that's perfectly proper. These people can transfer to whoever they want. Well, maybe not whoever, but certainly seems that way. So you'll see these mortgage servicing agents be involved with a couple of years and passing it on to someone else, etc. So in 2006, Thompson, and I'm trying to know, that was Thompson Realty Company, and Thompson Realty Company obtained a judgment against the owner, and that's because the property, sorry, I'm really skipping something here that I need to understand. So in any event, there was a judgment against the owner, so then in 2014, DITEC filed a complaint against the woman to foreclose upon the refinancing mortgage, and then they also filed a second amended complaint, and so what happened is they filed cross motions for summary judgment in 2016, and Thompson and DITEC filed cross motions for summary judgment, and they were seeking priority over the plaintiff's other liens. So we'll be back in a minute.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
What do you want to do when you grow up? When we were young, it's a question we were often asked. As we get older, our passions become clearer, our pursuits become careers, and if we're diligent, we begin to plan for the life we want to live. That's why, at Ameriprise Financial, we ask what's most important to you. Starting with our confident retirement approach, your Ameriprise Financial advisor will ask questions that help you arrive at a customized plan that allows you to realize your goals today, tomorrow, and throughout retirement. With the right financial advisor, life can be brilliant. Call Michelle Heidi and Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 16 Lee Street, Units 1B and 1C in Clinton, New Jersey. The confident retirement approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, a registered investment advisor.
Well, back to this case, which actually becomes a brawl between who had priority because things were not done correctly. And it's not so much the person who owned the property. They're not the ones who are really fighting this. And up on appeal, the DITAC argued that the trial court was in error for failing to apply at least one of the equitable doctrines of subrogation, replacement, or modification in DITAC's favor. The appellate division disagreed. And, of course, what they did is they talked about priorities governed in New Jersey by recording statutes. And this is why it's so important that someone has a good title company and makes sure, and a good lawyer, frankly, to make sure everything is done properly. Because in this case, that was the problem. It got something was recorded instead of being recorded in the Somerset County when it should have been. This was not recorded until 2011. When they correctly recorded with the Somerset County Clerk's Office. So then there were a series of assignments, and that's why DITAC became the holder of the refinancing mortgage. However, that was really significant, and I'm going to break quickly because I'm going to get two people in here who I want to talk and get started in the sports guys. But this is the kind of case that if somebody came to me, I would talk to my friend Bill Wolfson because it had to do with who had priority on these mortgages. And the interesting thing, and Bill would be able to explain much more than I would about the fact that New Jersey is a race notice state, which means that when two parties compete for priority over each other's lien, the party that recorded its lien first will normally prevail so long as that party did not have actual knowledge of the other party's previously acquired interest. And the interesting thing is here I am a family lawyer, and yet I recently had to file a motion because the way a judge decided something, I wasn't sure I wasn't sure that he really intended that any future judgment creditors have priority over my client. So I needed him, and I need him, it hasn't been decided, I need him to decide whether or not that was his intention, that instead of giving my client a judgment now, a lien now, if he waits to not allow her to have a lien until sometime in the future, then any other judgment creditors would have priority. So anyway, I will we'll go and play the news and come back and start with the sports guys. And please, you know, stay tuned, because my understanding is we have someone here to talk to us today about fishing in Canada. Am I right,
That's
Bill?
Absolutely positive.
Okay.
That's absolutely positively right, Pat. It's going to be a great fishing trip we're going to talk about.
Okay, so hold on, folks, and we'll play the news, and we'll be back and start the sports guys right on time.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Attorney General Bill Barr is looking into the case against former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. Barr asked a U.S. attorney in Missouri to look into Flynn's FBI interview. Flynn pled guilty to lying to the FBI about contacts with Russian officials. Former FBI Director Andrew McCabe will not be facing charges. The Department of Justice announced it would not pursue the case of lying to investigators against a man who authorized a 2016 Russia investigation. Former Department of Justice official James Trusty tells Fox News there seems to be a bit of a double standard.
Not everything in life that's wrong ends up with a criminal prosecution, and it's really kind of fascinating to have a guy that was at the center of all of these decisions by Comey to have false statement prosecutions if you're connected with Trump, but to not have false statement prosecutions if you're connected with Hillary Clinton.
USA Radio News.
Here is some great news. If you missed the deadline to sign up for health insurance, or if you sign up for a plan that you're just not happy with, you still have a choice. It's called MediShare. It's the affordable alternative to health insurance, and it's worked beautifully for 25 years. They have more than 400,000 members now around the country. MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry, and over the years, members have shared over $3 billion of each other's medical bills, so they could help share your needs too. And best of all, you could save a lot of money with MediShare. The typical savings for a family is about $500 a month. Your savings could be more or less, but think about what you could do with that extra money every month. You're not stuck with a high-cost health plan. You can join MediShare anytime, so call them today and check it out. Here's the number to find out more, and there's no pressure. They are super easy to talk to. Call 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
A deal for a temporary truce with the Taliban has been reached. NBC News says the one-week agreement aims at reducing violence in the war-torn region. There are currently 12,000 U.S. troops in Afghanistan. They've been acting primarily as peacekeepers and in advising Afghan forces. President Trump is anxious to get U.S. troops out of Afghanistan. The games will go on. Japanese organizers say the 2020 Summer Olympics in Tokyo will not be interrupted by the coronavirus outbreak. USA Radio Network's Robin Walensky has more on the story.
The very latest now on the coronavirus. The folks who are running the Olympics in Japan say concerns over the virus will not stop the Summer Games. And at this point, they do not plan on postponing any of the events in Tokyo. The Games run from July 24th through August 9th. For USA Radio News, I'm Robin Walensky.
Thank you, Robin. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go and pay a...
Okay, we're going to be back with the sport. We're going to start with the sports guys just after I give you some quick information about the weather. And I'll bet that the guest today, our guest who is... Joel Albert, he may have done the kind of fishing that I'm going to at least briefly talk about, because tonight it will feel like it's northern Wisconsin. And, of course, as a kid growing up in Wisconsin, the sport in the winter was ice fishing. And we're going to have about an 8 degrees tonight. I can't seem to get the rest of this weather up. The rest of the weekend is going to be great, but it's going to be clear and cold tonight, about 8 degrees. By tomorrow, sunny, high of about 33 degrees. Tomorrow night, only 24, so that's not bad. Although, you know, it will be freezing. So really be careful if there's any water anywhere because it's icy. I know this morning it was icy at my house. And by Sunday, it'll be partly sunny, high of about 46 degrees. And Washington's birthday, if you don't have to work, hey, mostly sunny, high of about 49 degrees. So, of course, Bill Wolfson, one of the other sports guys, is here, and I'm going to have him introduce our guest, but I do have to at least ask our guest at some point today to tell me how many times he's been ice fishing. But, Bill, what do you have to say?
Well, Pat, good afternoon. I'm Bill Wolfson, and I'd like every one of our listeners to sit back for a moment, close their eyes, and think about this. It's a bright, sunny day. The sun is on your face. The wind is in your hair. The air is clean, and you're on a beautiful lake up in northwestern Manitoba, and you're fishing, and you've just tossed a fly. You just cast a fly on the water, and now let me introduce my special guest today, Joel Alpert. Joel is an insurance executive who lives here in Ringo's, and he's spent the last 30 years traveling up to northwestern Manitoba to go fishing. And this is not just fishing. This is freshwater trophy fishing in areas that are not fished by anyone else except people through lodges. Now, you've got to fly from New Jersey all the way to Winnipeg in Manitoba. And then from Winnipeg, the very well-known Gangler's Lodge has planes that take you to their own airstrip for their main lodge. And the main lodge is a five-star facility from everything that I've read and seen. Joel will talk about that some more. And if you want to go fishing for the day, you get on a float plane and off you go to fly somewhere to angler or fishing heaven, and you get to fish for the day. And at the end of the day, they bring you back for a five-star meal, relaxation, very nice accommodations from what I've seen on the website. So, Joel, good afternoon.
Hi, Bill. How are you? Thanks for having me on. You just covered everything.
I think so, but you know, now we're going to drill down into the gory details.
Well, we'll do that.
Joel, how long have you been fishing up there?
I was up there 23 years. 23
really?
Times.
Yeah,
and with friends.
And tell us about the lodge. How do you, you know, we talked a little bit about how you get there. I know they have their own airstrip now.
Right.
But you're flying from Winnipeg all the way to northwestern Manitoba to the Seal River area. And what's the area like?
It's the most magnificent country that you can't even imagine. We always say that folks that were never there can't imagine what it's like. If I can, just real quick before I get into some of that detail, I'd like to do a couple shout-outs, if that's okay.
Go right ahead.
First, I want to give a shout-out to my wife, Beverly, who put up with this trip for 23 years.
Wait a minute.
Well, she gets
I
the medal.
Have to say something. Since it's Valentine's Day.
It's Valentine's Day.
Does this mean that Beverly doesn't have to get a gift?
No.
The gift is that you're out of the house for a few hours?
She likes it when I'm out.
Nope, maybe the gift should be that Beverly is sending him back up to Gangler's Lodge.
But also a shout-out to an old friend, Wayne Gangler, who owns the lodge, who I believe is listening in from Florida. And the man that put this whole thing together for us back in the early 90s was a gentleman that I worked with and I've known for close to 50 years, John Craner. Also listening in Florida with his son, Dr. John, who's a cardiothoracic surgeon in North Carolina, also one of our fishermen who owns the record up there for the largest northern pike, 49 and a half inches.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
Big fish up there, but I know they're listening in. If I can just quickly give you a little bit of the genesis of the trip. John had said in the early 90s, it was 1992, that he'd like to put together a fishing trip either to Canada or Alaska. he'd like me to go. And I said, John, I never fished. I was 42 years old. I never fished in my life. Well, we had an office in Raritan Center in Edison, and there was these fishing expo show down the street. And on a Saturday, we went over and walked around, and all of the lodges were there showing their wares. And we walked up to a booth where the two gentlemen, it happened to be Wayne Gangler and his son Kenny, were the only two lodge owners that were wearing jackets and ties. And that was big with us. And they had a beautiful booth, and they had great pictures. So long and short of it, we made a decision to go, and our